We're joined by former Georgia head coach Jim Donnan, College Football Hall of Famer. Coach, good morning. How are you? Good to see you.
Glad to be with you guys. There's brighter days ahead, hopefully, and what we've got to do is just keep on trucking and understand that this is a whole process of establishing a new regime here. And right now, we got a reality pill, which we've been trying to talk about. But when you look at the Ole Miss program, the last 2 years, the best team in the country, without question, Alabama. There's not anybody that could really dispute that. Maybe Ohio State, some of these other teams, you know, have similar talent. But Ole Miss has gotten over 800 yards and 80-some points on Alabama the last 2 years. They scored in the high 40s in the in a New Year's Six game against Oklahoma State. They just have a prolific offense, and they've got the biggest and fastest wide receivers in the country as a core group, not to mention a really good quarterback. That's not an excuse. It's just the reality is they, except for the Mississippi game against Memphis last year when they turned the ball over, they've just been really good offensively, and we've just got to understand that that's not one of our real strengths. It's playing the pass or rushing the passer, and then offensively, we've still got the nemesis of, offensive line is just not one of our talent bases right now. And you can just look at our recruiting and the lack of an offensive line, and that's pretty much where it is. But encouraging that I really think these guys are well coached. I think they're training them. They're trying to make them improve. And we've got three games left against teams that are similar to us or even maybe better in this game this week. Florida and Auburn, and we got to find a way to win a couple of them.
Boy, and that was just brutal on Saturday just to watch that thing snowball and get out of hand really fast.
Well, you know, that's the thing about a team that's had a little adversity like Ole Miss had. You know, they had led in the first half against the number one team in the nation, Alabama, and at that time Florida State was number two, and they had given up leads, you know, three touchdown leads. So I think their intensity level was there from the standpoint of the coach saying, look, you know, we've been here before. Let's keep the hammer down. And that's what they did. I mean, they just kept attacking us. And they've got very talented people. I was surprised they ran the ball that effectively, too, because they really – that helped their passing game. But that Ingram guy tight end is probably going to be the – all SEC, and then you see the receivers, just Sam was there. The height and speed and quickness is just very evident. So that's just they're just a really well-coached offensive machine. And defensively, they were we were on nemesis a little bit with some early penalties, and then we had some drops, and then Jacob missed some passes too. The accuracy factor is going to be something until he gets – a lot more at home. You know, he rushes himself because of our protection, and he's not a real accurate thrower right now. So you couple the fact that our protection is not as good as it needs to be, we're behind, receivers aren't making any routine plays, and it's just it was an ugly loss. I mean, you couple the fact that they played really well, and then we were pressing. There's no question we were pressing. I mean, people thinking, well, how's this happening to us? We're the 12th ranked team in the nation and all that. But, you know, that's the deal, though. We're not in the top 15 in the country. We've said that first day we started talking about it. But everybody wants us to be. It's just going to take a little while.
Coach Donnan here in the studio with us. David Johnston, Sam Franco along with you.
Yeah, Coach, I was talking yesterday about how I ran into a mystery Ole Miss player after the game, and he was kind of spilling the beans on some of their stuff to us, which, you know, I was very appreciative of. Not going to throw the kid's name out there.
Was he giving you a loan? Did he have some money that he gotten from Ole Miss?
No, oh, he okay. did not. But he was.
He had a CPAP machine, though. He was wearing a mask.
That's right. No, but he was telling us basically how, like you just pointed out, they knew Georgia didn't have height in the receiving core, and they knew that their receivers were going to be able to take advantage of Georgia's smaller defensive backs. And basically, he said their game plan was bracket 16, which is take McKenzie out of the game because he was the only one on Georgia that could really do anything. So their game plan was that, and they also knew that with that offensive line, they weren't really concerned with Georgia being able to run the ball. So when you know that going into a game, I guess it kind of feels like it makes things it's almost like if the team you're playing, and look, this could have just been a kid after the game kind of being a little cocky.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, when 40 years I've given scouting reports, and a lot of them have worked, a lot of them haven't, but you know what your plan is, and anybody, you study the tape, you study who you got to stop, and you study who you got to hopefully take advantage of some inefficiencies. And we've said this on this show for 4 weeks. As the season progresses, every team has the benefit of extra tape of watching people. You know, going into the year, you got a lot of thoughts and processes of last year and looking at what Chaney did at Pittsburgh and Kirby did at Alabama and all that. But there was up in the air what our systems were going to be. But they did study some of these personnel guys that are coming back. So, but this is not a new thing for us playing the ball in the air. Last year, you just watched people like Louisiana Monroe. Time after time, people hit a lot of passes on us. If we don't get the rush from guys like Floyd and Jenkins and those guys last year, we would have been torched in the secondary last year. So now we don't even have the rush to go with the playing the ball in the air. And it's just a situation where you got to keep coaching, recruiting, and understand that it's going to be a little while before we get there as far as our personnel. But I do feel like that there's some good young players here and some really great recruits coming in. So nobody really wants to hear that, because you look at last year's team, 10-3, but who did we beat last year? I mean, that's not taking anything away from Coach Rick. It's just the idea that we didn't do in the big games last year. We were behind pretty badly against Alabama early. I mean, Tennessee, we had a shot, and Florida, you know, that. So we're going to have the same deal this year. I mean, we got three teams left, like I said, that are really big on our schedule to see whether we're going to have a, you know, 9 or 10 win season.
4 sacks so far for the Dogs, 12 by the opposition. So 3 times as many by the opposition. What else were you asking about, Coach, before
turnover
the show?
Turnover margin. What is it?
The turnover margin. Let me see. Where are the Dogs in the turnover margin? I'll find it here in just a second. Let's see here. Let's see. Georgia's lost 4 fumbles. The opposition's lost 3, so that's a -1. And then in the, let's see.
Oh,
in
the
interceptions. Let's see here. So, okay, here we go. Georgia's thrown 3. The opposition's thrown 6. So Georgia's, I think, a +2 in the turnovers.
Yeah.
But, you know, most of that was the second half of Missouri.
What about the penalties?
Penalties. All right, hang on a second. All right, penalties. 23 for Georgia, 28 for the opposition.
Well, 23 is an average of about a little bit over 4 a game.
Yeah.
The thing that hurt us in the early game, it was an early game, and our team in the first quarter, early part of the first quarter, we had some motion penalties, which that's going to happen with your own line in a loud stadium. But when you get a team that's struggling to make first downs, and you get 1st and 15 or 2nd and 12, that really limits you a little bit, you know, when you're not an overwhelming offensive team. And we're definitely struggling for some identity because, you know, we can't get the running game going good enough. And then the passing game is adequate at best because of the drops, because of protection problems,
right,
and the inaccuracy that Eason has. He's going to overthrow some balls because he throws the ball very hard, and it's hard to be as accurate as you need to sometimes on short passes.
Georgia's been out touchdowned so far, 15-13, and certainly a glaring weakness for the Dogs. 3 for 8 kicking field goals. The opponent's 5 out of 6 in the first 4 games.
And what's our third down efficiency?
Third down efficiency, Georgia is 39%. The opposition is 35%. But I don't have the SEC stats.
Yeah, that's still pretty
stats.
Good, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's – but stats are really – can look at a lot of ways. I mean, you got a breakaway game last week, you're going to make it harder. And then,
right,
you know, we're down 45-0. I mean,
right.
And people, realistically, they had their – second group in, but I was glad to see our guys, you know, do a good job of controlling the ball and keeping them off the field and, you know, getting those 2 touchdowns. But it was
I always like to wait till you get into the season with statistics, like, so that you have enough SEC games under your belt, because Missouri beating Delaware State 79-0 is going to skew the stats there for Missouri.
Yeah, that was they were going for some stats for Locke. I think he had 5 or 6 touchdown passes, but
and they had 10-minute quarters there in the second half. Too.
You know what I always look for though is lost yardage plays. If you can create lost yardage plays as a defensive football team, that means you hit some guys behind
right.
the line on some running plays, or you get some sacks, then that really helps you as far as your defense. Because I keep harping on this, but you know, you feel like you're on ice there out there against those guys. I mean, everybody's holding their breath because they run the play so fast, and they're always challenging your own defense. So you need a little help there. You need a bad snap from center, or you need a lost yardage play, or you need a guy to run into each other. That one play where their two backs ran into each other was kind of funny there. But we got to get some help from the other team. And then, you know, coming up this week, we're playing against a team that's very similar in a lot of ways. I think they're probably better. Vols are better on defense, but they got a similar quarterback, not near the passer that Kelly is, but maybe a little bit better runner. But I watched that Florida game, and I was just at halftime. I was thinking to myself, I mean, they're booing them up at Vol Mania, man. They're booing that team when they go off the field. And then all of a sudden, if you've ever seen a team go into a shell, I mean, what happened to Callaway in the second half for Florida? They forgot that he was on the team. I mean, he was lighting Tennessee up, you know, over 100 yards, and he didn't even touch. They only made 11 yards in the second half going into about 3 minutes to go in the game. I mean, 11 yards.
Yeah, and Tennessee scored 38 straight points. I wouldn't have thought that would happen against that Florida defense. And now the Vols come to Athens with a 10-game winning streak going back to last year.
Their confidence level right now is out of sight because they have won 10 straight. The last game they lost was to Alabama when they had the ball going in against Alabama, maybe to win there in Bryant Denny Stadium. So this is a tall task here. This is a better team than Ole Miss, I think, as a total team. When you add their kicking game, their return game is out of sight. They got guys like back there returning kicks, kind of like McKenzie for us, and you know, they really have a good kicking game. And defensively, Barnett is just one of those guys that can take over the game up front. They got some big old defensive linemen. They've had some injuries. I don't know if Cam Sutton's going to play this week. Their best defensive back missed last week. So, but we do have this home game. You know, upsets happen all around the country. We can play with these guys. We've beaten them 5 out of the last 6. A lot of guys on our team know that. So, we got to go in with the idea that find a way to win and hit some big plays. That's the number one thing I think has got to happen with us offensively, is when you're struggling to make first downs and you're having penalties and lost yardage plays, your offense needs to be a quick strike type situation where you get some easier plays to negate those lost yardage situations. So maybe we can get some big plays this week. We saw Florida do that to Tennessee last week, and certainly Jacob is better passer than Appleby, so the kid that played for Florida last week.
Coach, would you say the biggest key in terms of trying to beat Tennessee, at least on the offensive side of the ball for them, is keeping Dobbs in the pocket?
Yeah, I mean, that's easier said than done. I mean, you'd like to say, okay, we got to contain this guy, but he is so quick that – you know, it's not like when you play against a pro quarterback where if you just rush in your contain lanes and you make him step up in the pocket, he's not going to do anything to hurt you. This guy looks to run the ball. I mean, he will run it. I mean, when he goes back to pass, there's a pretty good chance he might be running it too. And the other thing he does is they call quarterback designated runs. So let's say we're in the huddle and we're going to run 34 gut. That means I'm going to hand the ball off to Hurd, running back. But I'll go back there with Dobbs, and I'll call 48 quarterback slant, and they'll just snap the ball to him and run the outside zone, and he'll be running like a single wing sweep there with Hurd running ball. So they call a lot of quarterback predetermined plays or quarterback counter, like the counter tray, like Washington Redskins used to. Instead of the tackle pulling, now the fullback's the lead blocker with the guard. And And then the quarterback draw, if you play two man, it'll hurt you with that. They've got about three or four design quarterback runs, so you know he's going to run the ball at least 20 times in the game, and maybe 9 or 10 of them will be where he's predetermined to run it.
You know, it's interesting, too, with Dobbs, because if you, like, if you're committing to him, you're talking about that sweep. He's just going to roll out. If his linemen stay close enough to the line of scrimmage, he can beat you with a throw there, too. Although accuracy is not his thing, but still.
He's gotten better at that, but he's still, particularly down the field passes. He can throw these screens and things like that, but he's not real accurate down the field. But we get back to the same thing we talk about. And I know everybody gets tired of hearing, but these RPOs,
yeah.
You just watch everybody around the country, Baylor, Oklahoma State, all these teams running the spread, running these RPOs, and they just they really hurt you because it's hard to defend. I mean, you got a quarterback that's on the edge there, and do you come up and try to tackle him, or do you still stay with your man, or do you what do you do? Because once he gets outside, he can throw it or run it as long as the linemen don't go downfield more than 3 yards, and that's hard to defend.
You know, you're talking about negative loss plays, too. Another thing, that running back for Ole Miss, Akeem Judd, he's carried the ball 41 times this year with no negative, running plays on the docket there,
that's
too.
That's pretty impressive.
yeah. He's got no loss for yards.
How many negative plays do we have with, like, Chubb? He's got at least Chubb 12
has,
or 15, hasn't he?
I'll tell you here, I think he has minus 19 rushing yards. And let's see here. Oh, it's on here somewhere, Coach. Yeah, Chubb has, I mean, he's done okay. But I'm sorry, 17 yards for loss this year in 83 attempts. And,
well, the thing that we're talking about there, and everybody watches the games and maybe doesn't study it as much as some people, but anytime the other side, we watch the Nichols game, we watch every game we've played since the Carolina game, people are penetrating our line, you know, and if you, it's like anybody, if you're driving your car and you have to take a detour, you're not going to be on the interstate running. The same thing's true with a running play. If you think you're going to open it with a short slide step and keep your shoulders square, and then you're going to read the butt of the right tackle and read his block, and then you're going to break the insider out. And then all of a sudden, when you do that slide step, there's another guy in your face from the other team. How are you going to read the block? So we've got to create at least a tie at the line of scrimmage. And I look for our line to keep improving, but I also look with a guy like Pittman or a guy like Chaney and Kirby Smart being the head coach, I mean, I would see us maybe trying some other type lineups in there to give some other guys a chance, because there gets to be a point where you keep hoping the guy's going to do it, but, you know, they hadn't produced like he hoped. But that's not any second guessing. That's just the reality that coaches constantly look at different lineups to try to get something that's effective. But we're going against a premier defensive line this week. We got guys on their team, Tennessee, going to be playing on Sunday, and they're going to – we got to find a way to corral number 9, because he took over that game for Tennessee in the second half. Burnett just absolutely destroyed Florida's line.
David Johnston, Sam Franco here along with you. Coach Donnan in the house, as he is on Tuesdays at 706-549-6000. You can always email 960theref@coxradio.com. Georgia and Tennessee coming up on Saturday at 3:30. Jim says, email, okay, I get it. Tennessee looks pretty good, and we're going to be challenged. Tell me what we can be successful of in terms of scheme and matchup. So we will definitely talk about that. Jim, thank you very much for the email.
All right, 8:31 back here on the morning show. We are presented by St. Mary's Healthcare System. Sam Franco, David Johnston, and Coach Donnan along with you. If you got a question for the coach, call us at 706-549-6000. You can email 960theref@coxradio.com. Coach, I got a question for you. Obviously, the loss of Arnold Palmer hit a lot of people pretty hard yesterday. Did you ever get to meet the King?
Sure did. I'm telling you, the one of the highlights of my life, going back on some different things, people you meet, but you know, my father worked for Wells Fargo, Wachovia Bank, and Arnold Palmer had a Cadillac dealership in Charlotte, where my family moved after I was in college. And so Wachovia basically had the finance situation for his dealership, and he didn't actually do a lot there, but he would come by there, you know, occasionally just to check on things and sign autographs and stuff and be, you know. So a couple of times I went with my dad over there when Arnold was there. And, of course, he and my dad were not close friends, but, you know, he because of the dealership. So I got a chance to meet him, and he asked me, he said, would you like an autograph? And I said, yeah, I'd like it. So I still got it. And then when we played in the Citrus Bowl, when I was at Missouri, we played down there, and part of the deal was you went to the Arnold Palmer's club there, the staff, and had a lunch, and he was there then, and he didn't actually remember me until I told him about my dad, and then he remembered my dad, so I got to see him there again. And then the last round that he played at the Masters, which I'm not sure what year that was, I went down there. And I walked around with Furman Bisher from the Atlanta Constitution and about three holes, because he was doing a story about Arnold's last round. And Furman's from North Carolina, too. And we reminisced about, you know, some of the deals with Arnold back at Wake Forest when I was in high school and everything. And Arnold actually came by there and waved at Furman, you know. So it was just watching him go up that 18th fairway the last time, you know, he actually walked up and played was just incredible.
Well, you know, he's definitely – it was weird waking up Sunday, you know, and hearing about the Miami Marlins pitcher, and then at the end of the day with Arnold Palmer, Sunday was a tough day.
Well, you know, you just look at Roy McIlroy won $13 million about on Sunday, $10 million for the FedEx, and I don't know if it's 13, but maybe 11.
I think they said 11.5.
11.5, but anyhow,
you know, but 11.5, 13 million.
All of that's got to be directly attributable to Arnold Palmer's and what he was able to do as far as marketing television.
Yeah,
and of course Nicklaus and Player and all these other guys helped because he had the competition, but. And it's been well chronicled watching everybody talk about how genuine the guy was. But, you know, there's no way you can really get it across unless you're ever around him to understand. You know, you're around some of these icons and you can just see they just can't wait to get away and they got to go do something else, you know, which I understand because there's a lot of demands. But he made you feel like you're the only guy in the room every time I was ever around the guy. And he was really... I mean, he asked you questions that weren't like, how you doing and all that. You know, I mean, he was really
right.
Like he was talking to me. He said, how you gonna take it easy on Wake Forest this year? Because I was playing quarterback at State. And that was another time I saw him. I forgot about that. And I did a game with Jeff Dantzler, Wake Forest in Maryland, about 2008 or 2009. And they were giving away the Arnold Palmer Scholarship at halftime. And I went down on the field before the game, and Arnold was there, and I shook his hand then. So that's the last time I actually did it. I'm sure J.D. remembers that, too.
I'm sure. I'm surprised he wasn't down there, too.
Well, he was probably over he rode up there with Arnold on his plane, you know.
No kidding.
Hey, Coach, we got a call, and the caller wanted me to ask you something, and, you know, this is transitioning away from that, but it's about this Georgia football team. He wants to know if this team reminds you of your first team that you had here in terms of, like, talent level.
I don't think we have near as many players as I had. I feel like we had some really good players. We just didn't do a good enough job understanding who were our best players early on. We just didn't get some of the best guys out on the field. We lost a couple games we definitely should have won. Southern Miss, Ole Miss, we had a big victory there. We should have had that game. But I think it was pretty easy to understand based on what we were able to do in 97, 98, and the guys we got in later. But I think this is no question they don't have near the players that we had when I started here.
How do we not have any tackles?
We got some good players here now. Don't get me wrong.
No, I know. I'm just saying.
I'm not here defending Kirby, but I'm just saying
And I'm not trying to pick on Tyler Catalina. It's just Google, bizarre.
You can go back to December when he got the job, and I said all you people fired up about Kirby should be, but you know the cupboard is not nearly as strong as we think it is, and that was based on watching practice, watching the games, listening to our coaches, talking to Mike Bobo, who had left the program, was now in another place. I asked him, you know, I said, what do you think of our talent level? He said, Coach, we don't have near the linemen we need. So that's just that's a bad situation from that standpoint. But and you know, you talk about a guy like Catalina coming in here from Rhode Island and being able to play. You saw the same thing with Florida last year. Had a kid from Fordham transfer yep. and played for them. But Catalina's is gonna continue to develop, but you don't have a whole lot of time to trade for get on the trading wire. I mean, you got to get your guys and coach them up, and that's.
And don't get me wrong, I'm glad he's here. Georgia needed him, but it's just amazing that you know it's gotten to this point.
Well, I heard you guys talking about the 2013 class, but between the transfers and the guys that were kicked off and the defections, you got to have more than five or six guys on your team from per class
yeah.
contributing, but not only for depth, but I heard Kirby talking on the Delta report, you know, about the special teams. Well, you get to the special teams, then a lot of your players are having to double dip on those too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've been impressed away with Kirby saying, hey, this is on me, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, players got to, you know, do what they got to do too. So if for us to be a winning team, we got to avoid losing too. We can't be missing field goals. We can't be jumping off sides. We can't be dropping balls. I mean, it's hard enough to beat a good team when you do the routine things. But when you don't add those in there, then it's very difficult.
Yeah, Tony emailed in and said, what changed from the North Carolina game? How were the Dogs able to run the ball like that and can't do it, you know, haven't been able to do it since then?
Well, North Carolina's got the worst defense that we've played against. If you take – I mean, they weren't as good as Nichols on defense. Look at everybody that's played them. I mean, James Madison ran for I don't know how many yards on them. Pittsburgh did the same thing last week. Illinois did the same thing. So but that game was a tremendous example of a team win because we had the ball for 38 minutes. So our defense wasn't out on the field. You know, we saw some of the shots that North Carolina took in that game that were there that they missed. So that helped us. You know, it's kind of a perfect storm there, and their offense wasn't on the field. Our defense created some lost yardage plays, and they missed some plays too. They were three and out a lot there. And then you go to the Missouri game. Seven straight possessions in the second half, they go three and out. So part of that was their style, but also we did a good job getting some turnovers too. So for us to win, the other team's got to help us some, you know, when you go against a good team.
By the way, I was looking at a couple of Falcons clips on Twitter while you were talking there too. I know Kyle Shanahan gets bashed pretty good, but, man, they took it to the Saints last night.
Exactly. I mean, if you want to get healthy, go play the Saints. I
mean, is Rob Ryan still coaching there?
No, Rob's up there.
I know. He's in Buffalo. But it looked like Rob Ryan was still coaching there. I don't know who.
This game Thursday night is going to be one that's just going to be really one that I can't wait to see. Belichick against Ryan. And who's going to be the quarterback for Belichick? And Ryan has fired his offensive coordinator. They won last week. They beat the Arizona Cardinals, which I was surprised with the new coordinator. And that's going to be an interesting game. But getting back to some of these questions, I just think from a fan base and from a support base is go back to last year, go back to the end of the year, and look at our team. We barely beat Georgia Southern in overtime. Barely. We played a 9-6 game against a woeful Missouri team that only won one conference game and hung on to beat Tech, 14-7 or 21-14, whatever it was, and then played a team in Penn State. I saw a stat yesterday that just blow your mind. James Franklin is 0-18. He's the head coach of Penn State. He's 0-18 against Power 5 teams that have 8 wins or more.
Ouch.
So a lot of his wins at Vandy and at
Penn State
have come against teams that when they played him didn't win more than 8 games. So
he hadn't beaten a Power 5 team with 8 wins or more.
Right.
Wow. Mm. That's why their fans are like, Tom Herman, what do you want to come? What about Les Miles? You want to come see us?
I tell you, Tom Herman and we're going to see Tom Herman, Jimbo Fisher. We're going to see all these different scenarios. But I tell you, a guy to me that's kind of in his comfort zone out there and he likes it, but a guy that's either going to get a big pro job or a big college job or he's going to get endowed at Stanford is David Shaw.
Yep.
Because – he's very articulate. You watch him on TV, whether it's NFL Network when he analyzes pros or where he – but his team is – I've never heard of a coach. This is the way – he said, what were your goals in this game? He said, we wanted to be brutally intellectual. And so he said, would you explain that? He said, we just want to be so smart about what we did and attacking them that we were brutal. So, I mean, there's one thing about being physical, but being brutally intellectual. So I guess it's running a lot of different formations. They were very fortunate to beat UCLA. That's their 9th straight win over UCLA and 6th straight over Jim Moore out there because Jim Moore's had a hard time against them. But I think David Shaw is one of the best coaches in the country without question. And I think Tom Herman is certainly an outstanding coach. But, you know, he was left, compared to what we have, he was left a full cupboard there. That team won 8 games the previous year and probably should have won more. And they had they take a defensive back and made him a quarterback, Greg Ward Jr. So what about some of these games we're going to talk about later? But coming up over the next few weeks, we're going to have Louisville at playing against a really good Clemson team, and then we're going to have Louisville and Houston. Wow.
Yeah, there's definitely some big matchups coming up too. And
how about that Clemson guy? I mean, Lamar Jackson, I watched him the other night. 25 touchdowns accounted for in 4 games.
He's having a Cam Newton season. I mean, if he keeps this up, I mean, he's going to waltz to the Heisman Trophy.
Right. Cam Newton couldn't throw the ball in college like this guy. I mean, Cam's developed his passing, but this guy's not near as strong as I tell you another one that everybody kids about, but the guy that recruited him, Lamar Thomas, recruited him from down at Boynton Beach, Florida. Florida was in there to the end on him, too. Can you imagine if he was at Florida?
Wow.
And so Louisville got him. And this guy, Lamar Thomas, last spring after recruiting, decided he was going to Kentucky. So he left Louisville to go to Kentucky. So that was not a real good strategical move.
Does not seem that way, no.
We'll take a quick timeout. Coach Donnan here in the studio with us. Let me see if we've got anything.
Did we answer Jim's question? What was his question exactly?
You talking about the email question or the call that Sam got?
Jim had an email that we were going to hit about.
Let me see
about
here.
The style or something.
Oh yeah, that's right. He was like, "Tell me what can be successful in terms of scheme and matchups."
I will. I think certainly we've been looking at different groupings as far as tight ends, wide receivers, Sony in the backfield with Chubb and all that. The number one thing that we got to do with our team is make sure that we don't stop ourselves with penalties and missed assignments and lost yardage plays. If we can just keep those to a minimum, then I think we can create some situations where McKenzie and Michelle and some of these receivers get open against because, you know, we watched Appalachian State, Ohio U, Virginia Tech when they weren't fumbling. I mean, there's some plays to be made against this Tennessee defense. It's just a case of you can't let Barnett disrupt you.
That's kind of what you were alluding to earlier about tennis or Florida. They had like 3 explosive plays, and that's how they got out to the lead. And then that went away, and suddenly it was all Tennessee there. Can Georgia get those kind of 30, 40-yard plays? And can
they
get
several
of them?
I mean, like I say, I think Jacobs got the firepower to get the ball down the field. I mean, like Appleby was. I don't know that he can move around like Appleby did. I mean, that's going to be the – real premium Saturday is these guys are going to have target practice at him as far as his lack of mobility. But we just got to protect him and understand that, throw some quick release passes. And, you know, they play a lot of press coverage. Here's the other thing that this Shoup guy, who's the D coordinator, was the D coordinator for Penn State in the bowl game last year. So he knows our personnel pretty good. You know, he's had a chance to not only watch us this year, but he watched all 11, 12 games we played last year getting ready for the bowl game. So he's got a good idea about our personnel. And I think that's what's good about Kirby coming in within the conference. He and Coach Tucker know Tennessee back, you know, really well, because he's played against Tennessee in a crossover game every year for Alabama. And he said in his press conference yesterday that Tennessee was one of the most physical teams they played last year. So he's aware of that, the fact that they got some really good players up front.
It's 847, Coach Donnan here in the studio. You can call 706-549-6000. You can also email 960theref@coxradio.com. All right, back here on the morning show presented by St. Mary's Healthcare System, 851. David Johnston, Sam Franco, former Georgia head coach and College Football Hall of Famer Jim Donnan here in the studio with us. Stevie T says, Coach, where were you in 1980? That was a great year for the Dogs. Where were you in 1980, Coach?
I was in Columbia, Missouri.
In Missouri, okay.
Getting ready to – we had lost a quarterback named Phil Bradley, who actually played NFL and Major League Baseball, and we were trying to decide who we're going to play at quarterback for the next season. So that was where I was.
Back in
– but, you know –
the day
I knew about Herschel Walker,
yeah,
because Bill Lewis,
mm-hmm,
who was a defensive coach here along with some of the other great coaches,
yep,
like Irk, a couple years later, after Herschel's first year, he came out to Missouri and visited us because we had played against Mississippi State in a non-conference game, and we'd done a really good job of stopping their wishbone. Emory Ballard was the coach at,
right,
Mississippi State. And so, like all coaches do, you go visit teams that have had success against somebody you got to play, and they were going to play at Mississippi State the next year. And I think my son Todd was like in the sixth grade then, or seventh grade, and when he got back, he sent me autographed picture to Todd from Herschel Walker.
Cool.
So that was pretty nice of Coach Lewis. And now Coach Lewis's son is a secondary coach out at Oconee. And Coach Lewis, I've heard, it comes to the games. There's so many people there. I haven't had a chance to see him, but, you know, he's supporting his son like I'm supporting my grandson.
Sure.
So, but it's kind of interesting that I never will forget how much time we got here.
Let's see here. We got time, Coach.
All right. This is how we stop the wishbone.
All right.
You know, coaches watch when you play the other teams. You watch the other team's defense if you're an offensive coach, and if you're a defensive coach, you watch the other team's offense. But every week at Missouri, we would take 30 minutes and go in there and study the other team's position of what you coach. So since I coach the backs and quarterbacks, I would watch Mississippi State's people and see if there's any keys that I could give to our defensive coaches, even though I was an offensive coach. You got me there? We really don't usually study their personnel,
mm-hmm,
like that. But I noticed that their fullback, when he was running inside, had a lot of weight forward on his stance. And when he was going a little bit wider, he was pooched back, you know, in a little bit more upright stance. So I told that to Bull Reese, our defensive coordinator. I said, watch that over and over,
Bull,
and see
Reese,
if that holds up. And it was pretty vivid so if he was going inside the guard center for that easy fullback play, he really had a lot of weight forward. So Bull came up with what he called an animal call. And the animal call was, if you said dog, cat, any kind of animal, then you knew that guy was going forward. So our line would pinch.
Right.
So we didn't want to give away just have a dog call all the time or a cat. So any kind of animal call, let every defensive lineman know, we're coming inside. And then if he didn't say anything, you just widened out and played, didn't even worry about the fullback. We absolutely stoned them, beat them.
That's awesome.
And after the game was over, the Pepper Rogers was doing the game for ABC. He was the analyst. He said, it looked like Missouri knew every play that Emory Ballard was running. And so we told Bill Lewis about that. And when they played them, it held up pretty good, too. Georgia did a pretty good job on it. But a dog and a cat call was a big play for us for Missouri Tigers.
That's a great story. That is great. Hey, it's funny when you pick up one little small tendency like that, how you can use it to your advantage.
And I'm going to tell you something just as bad. We were playing Missouri. We were playing Texas. And one of our players' brother was a GA at Texas. And he knew a lot of our stuff, but he knew that he looked at our center, and he knew that our center, when he had one hand on the ball, he was pass protecting, and when he had two hands on the ball, he was running the run. And we, as all as coaches, we should know that. But they had a signal when the middle linebacker would put his hand behind his back, that let the defensive backs to know we were running, and they were coming up like gangbusters, held up 100%. And then he told us after the game, and Brad Edelman was our center. He played 12 years for the Saints.
Right.
And we said, hey, Brad, you got to give away your stance there, run or pass, man.
Just the little things
so
like
that. So
let's
get something on Tennessee. Come on, give us 100% tendency so we can know what they're doing.
Yeah, that would be great. All right, we got to take a quick time out here. Hour number two with Coach Donnan coming up next, right here on Athens Sports Radio 960. The Ref.